Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City! A 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime! Kansas City wins the game!
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. Yes, we will address the midday show coming up here in just a bit because there has been a plan to try to deceive you that I will uncover all of that coming up in just a bit. Yes, I will tell you the story about what happened yesterday at the Royals game, both on and off the field. We got a lot to get into. The Chiefs, they play their first game coming up in 2 days. The start of the NFL is tomorrow between the Cowboys and the Eagles. I am here. Rob is here. We are taking you up until 5:30 when we hand things back off to the Kansas City Royals as they look to get back in the win column against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I need you to do me a couple of favors before I tell you guys some stories. I need you guys to be listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan and 96.5thefan.com. I also need you to tell one friend to check out the show. I mean, it'd be great if you could tell two friends to check out the show. But you know what? If you could just tell one person to check out the show, you know what? I would greatly appreciate it. And I always need you to remember that the open of the show is brought to you by our dear friends over at The Other Place, a place that would never leave you hanging. So if you're looking for some great eats, some cold drinks, and you want to watch some football this weekend, be sure to include The Other Place. Let's start with the on the field with the Kansas City Royals. That's important, right? That's what really matters. Every day, the Royals are essentially trying to hit a two-leg parlay. Every day, they either need to win or they need the Mariners and the Rangers to lose. It's a real fine tightrope. Some of you are thinking that the Royals didn't lose ground yesterday. And technically, you are right. The Royals are no further back today than they were at the beginning of the action yesterday. But it is important to note when you are the trailing team and we are basically in the fourth quarter of the baseball season. In a football analogy, it's not just the score that matters. It's also the time that matters. The Royals lost a day. In a game in which you are playing a clear inferior team at the crib, you have a lead heading into the fifth inning, you got to figure out a way to scratch across a couple of runs, and you got to figure out a way to win that game. For you to score one run on four hits against the Los Angeles Angels is disappointing, especially when one of your competitors, one of the teams that you are chasing, falls yesterday in the standings. Their margin for error is nothing. The Royals essentially have to hit two-leg parlay after parlay, day after day after day, if they want to do this thing. Now, I have told you guys from the very, very beginning, all I want for the Royals to do is I want the Royals to just keep things close and keep things competitive for the next 2 weeks when they play the Seattle Mariners. Man, it certainly would be great to be a half game back when Seattle comes to town as opposed to 2.5 games back or 3 games back. Obviously, let's see how the next couple of weeks play themselves out, but every loss to a team like the Los Angeles Angels is a missed opportunity. That is not a good baseball team. That is not a team that is going anywhere. Their only purpose in life is to play spoiler. Do not let them spoil your chances. The Mariners look like they're leaving the door open a little bit. The Rangers seem obliged to try to walk through that opening and look ready to try to make the postseason. Let's see if the Royals are up to task. We have talked about this homestand. The Royals got 5 games left. You got to go at least 4-1 in these next 5 games. There is no more margin. There is no more room for error. There's just not enough time left for that. It is no longer a marathon. It is no longer early. We're even past the midway point. The movie's about to be over. We're past Labor Day. We have 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks left in the baseball season. There is no more room for error. There is no more room for losing at home to teams like the Los Angeles Angels, who have really no hope for the future. That's the on-the-field perspective of things. I can't believe that you guys have allowed somebody who came on this radio station the last time that these two teams played in basketball and tried to downplay this rivalry.
But if Missouri was 10th in the country or something, then there would be buzz. They're not. They haven't held up their end of the bargain since the series renewed, and I'm so glad it did. And this one's in Columbia, and I have no doubt it's going to be a great atmosphere, at least to start. We'll see what happens in the second half, because Missouri's been competitive for about 10 minutes.
I mean, this rivalry has already embarrassed Alex Gold one time. He is the same person who said this.
Then you add in the fact, this is not even hating, but like it's the reality that MU hasn't been competitive since they started playing in these games. They just haven't. And so maybe that changes in Columbia on Sunday. I don't think it's going to. This game doesn't have much buzz around it, guys. It just doesn't. Part of it is a lot of people aren't in college basketball mode.
I mean, you heard Cody in the back. Yeah. Tweedledee and Tweedledum chiming in the background. Thing one and thing two. I can't believe that you guys have been hoodwinked, deceived by somebody who doesn't even consider these to be big games.
I don't feel like this is that big of a game, actually.
And this is the person you're listening to? This is with whom you placed your fate? Believe it if you want to. We've got the proof. We've got the documents. Rob, you got two tickets, do you not? Where are they located at?
I am up in the 300 level behind the visitor bench on Saturday to watch KU and Missouri.
I got the same ones here on my phone with the parking pass. I offered them to Alex Gold. I offered them to him earlier today. Hey, would you like to go to the game? No, man. I got things to do, man. You know, I'm like, all right, man. Hey, I don't know what to tell you. You sure you don't want to go to the game? I mean, you are a sports talk host. It's kind of important to go to the games.
Nah, man, you know, I got stuff to do. It's early, man. I don't want to make the drive.
Excuses. That's all you've gotten from 10 to 2 is lies and excuses. And you buy this, caught up in the hype. Now, let me tell you the other story. This pains me to talk about this in person, because I was betrayed by a close friend. Let me tell you the truth of what happened yesterday at the Royals game. I planned on a quiet night at home, finishing up our documentary, Armageddon at Arrowhead. You can see it September 24th at Screenland Armor. My editor had some things come up. We weren't going to be able to edit. He's like, you know what, man, why don't we catch up the next day? It's like, all right, man, you know what? No problem. I'm sitting there now, lonely, bored, nothing to do. I planned on just trying to read more about the Chiefs' upcoming season so I could try to provide the best content that I can for you guys. All of a sudden, I get a text from a friend. She had gotten tickets from her job and wanted somebody to go to the game with her. Her family couldn't go to the game, and she turned to me because I'm like family. Like, you know what? Me being the great friend that I am, the great person, the humanitarian that I am, I decided to go to the game. I wanted to prep for the show, but that was taken away from me. That wasn't the only thing that was taken away from me. So I agreed to go to the game. We're riding there, having a great time, sharing friendship, stories. I stopped and got me some sunflower seeds from the local gas station. I was prepared for a great night at Kauffman Stadium. Little did I know that disaster was right around the corner. So we're sitting there, we're watching the game. All of a sudden, you know, the Royals are up. Jubilation is inside Kauffman Stadium. Next thing I know, the next 30 seconds would change the course of my life. The commercial break happens. The inning is over. I'm on my phone, just starting to do some of the prep for the show because I'm always thinking ahead. I'm focused on you guys at all time. Next thing I know, the people around me say, oh, look, you're on the Kiss Cam. I look up and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's me. I then look to my left, to my dear friend, my compadre, and I'm thinking, we're on the Kiss Cam. There's only one thing to do. I reach in. Next thing I know, and I'll never forget these words, they'll scar me for life. She said, you don't belong to me. And I'm sitting there dazed and confused that I would be betrayed by somebody I considered to be a dear friend. And the fact that Alex Gold would try to use my moment of disappointment and heartbreak and try to lump that in to the ass whooping that his team is going to get here coming up in a couple of days is really a reflection of his character and the kind of man that he is. He's a scared Jayhawk is what he is. He's shown you his character time and time again. I'm disgusted at the content that I heard earlier today. But you know what? This show will survive because that's what we do. We overcome. We focus on ourselves and we push forward. Rob, we will never speak of this again. There's no reason to speak of this again. I look around the office here and all I see is pictures of my disappointment and my heartbreak again, letting you know the character of the two men in the midday show. It's embarrassing. It's sad. I'm offended. Let's get back to sports. It's The Drive.
This is Wyatt Thompson from K-State, and you're listening to The Drive with CDOT right here on 96.5 The Fan and the Odyssey app.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Rob, what's going on?
What? Just playing bump music like I do every day. Just minding my business.
Is that how? Is that the kind of energy that you have today? Because right now, I'm trying to wonder whose side are you on? I understand that this week it's MU versus KU. I get it. You're an alum. Alex is an alum. I understand it. But now you're going to try to kick my back in too? You don't know what it's like to be at Kauffman Stadium and to feel like the only friend you have is Norma. Shout out to Norma. She's just an amazing woman. That's the only friend that I have. But I think that this is a safe place. This is supposed to be home for me. It's our show. And now you're poking fun too?
Listen, 51 weeks a year, I'm on your side. It's Mizzou Hate Week. I can't be on your side today. I just can't. I can't do it. You know what? If this happened next week or last week, I'm with you. Team anti-Alex Gold. But you know what? I think Gold makes a lot of good points. A lot of valid arguments come from that midday show. You know, there's a lot of people in the building that wear crimson and blue, and I think they're the best people in the building. That's just how I feel about it.
Okay. I understand that you got to do what you got to do. But I want to let you know, I will not forget this.
You should be happy you're not intercom anymore. I'd walk around and tape up all the M's in the building.
Okay. I see how you're going to play it. I see how you're going to handle things these next couple of days. Just, it will be noted and it will be documented. That's all I want to say.
By the way, who's going to be on the show today at 3?
Lance Leipold will be on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up in 40 minutes. Looking forward to catching up with the head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks. Look forward to getting his thoughts on the rivalry between these two schools. Can we talk about this for just a little bit? I promise you we'll get to the Chiefs. I know they play here coming up in a couple of days. Jalen Royals is going to be out. The Chiefs have really unprecedented continuity. We'll get to that coming up in a bit. But can I just give you guys my thoughts on this and then we can move on? Now, this is going to sound kind of hypocritical because I'm someone that loves to complain. In fact, I get paid to complain. I am a professional complainer. That's what the C and C dot stands for. You think that it stands for Carrington? No, it stands for complain. Boy, do I love it. I wake up thinking of things to complain about. But sometimes, can we just come to the conclusion of, let's see how it plays itself out. I love Red Zone. I don't really have much interest in watching football games at noon if they are not centered around Red Zone. You are not going to catch me watching Ravens and Dolphins at 12 o'clock. I'll watch it inside the package that Red Zone has put together, but me just watching that game or whatever game they give you on Fox or CBS, I'm not super interested in it. I'll watch the 325 game, obviously Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night football, the international games. That's a different beast. But from 12 to 3:30 in Casa de Carrington, we're watching Red Zone, and it is known by everybody. That is what we are doing. So earlier today, Scott Hansen was on the Pat McAfee show, and he said that some changes are coming to the channel.
Business folks handle the business.
Of course.
And I have no say over different elements that could or could not be in the show.
Okay.
And so I'll just tell you right now, when you see me come on the air here, we're going to hit the Octobox. We've got 8 games in the early window, taking you around all the different cities. And then when we get into it, ladies and gentlemen, it's been more than 250 days since the first full NFL Sunday, but we are back. And 7 hours of Red Zone football starts now.
Wow.
Well said.
I realize that might be a slight change to some of you, but that's what the catchphrase will be.
Listen,
going forward.
We all understand what the NFL is, okay? We all understand what the NFL is. Mm-hmm. As soon as we heard it's in 50 million homes and everybody's watching it, we knew immediately that there's going to be commercials dropped in there.
Someone just texted in, CDOT, are you going to join the boycott movement? There are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, people who are already committed. Can we slow down just a bit? We watch football with commercials all the time. Quite literally, all the time. Every college football game that you have ever watched has commercials. You watch and consume the commercials. The last Chiefs game that you watched, not counting the preseason game, but the last game that you watched is centered around you sitting there and watching the commercials. The commercials, they don't bother me. They really don't. They really don't bother me. I don't have much of an issue with commercials. I have just accepted them as part of life. I want to see how Red Zone implements the commercials. Are they going to put the Red Zone commercials smack dab at 2:45 right when things are getting good? Is it going to be a 2-minute drive, and when a team goes to the 2-minute warning, they're trying to sneak in a 30-second commercial and really mess up the vibe? Okay, if that's what they're planning on doing, I will stand right there with you, and I promise you on Monday I will complain with you. We can hold hands, join together, band together. I can't wait to complain with you if that's what they do. But I watch enough Red Zone to know that there's lulls in the action. There's lulls in the action. Especially in that 325 window. There's a lot of lulls where they keep telling you who scored a touchdown earlier in the day, or you see highlight packages of things that have already happened. I'm not that upset about it. I'm really not that upset about it. I just want to simply see how they implement the commercials. Are these 30-second commercials? Are they 1-second commercials? How are they implementing them in the flow of it? I think the NFL knows what we like and dislike about Red Zone. So I'm going to trust them a little bit here. If there's one thing that I think we have to give the NFL credit for, is they have mastered television. They have figured out how to package you a TV show. Whether it's Thursday Night Football, whether it's on Netflix, whether it's Red Zone, they have cracked the formula of packaging television. So let's just see how they do it. That's my only stance. I'm with you. I mean, no one loves commercials. I'm not excited when they go to a commercial. Like, oh, great. I can't wait to see this Meghan Trainor and Patrick Mahomes commercial for the 7th time. No one likes commercials. We watch them enough. I'm willing to give it a chance. Coming up in a couple of days, the Chiefs are not playing on Sunday. I imagine many of you are going to be in the same boat that I'm in, locked in the Red Zone at 12 o'clock. I already got my food plan ready. We already got the group chat. Hey, you're bringing this. I'm fired up for Red Zone. Let's just see how the commercials work. That's it. Can you guys keep an open mind about how they can do this? And then let's come back on Monday. We'll talk a little Chiefs Chargers. We'll talk some of this, and then we'll figure it out. Someone on the text line says, are you a Sunday ticket man? No, I am a Stream East man. I am a Mark My Sports man. I do not have Sunday ticket. I'm getting a little bit of Red Zone. I'm pulling up on the stream the game that I need to watch. I got a nice little setup here. It's been working great for me for quite some time. I think it's going to continue to work heading into this season. All right, let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, because I have a stat for you guys. One reason I am so optimistic about the Chiefs in this early portion of the season, that I think if we really sat here and we compared the Chiefs' first 4 games
to other teams in the NFL first four games, this is probably the most difficult stretch that any team has. I know we all kind of poke fun at the Chargers, but that's a double-digit team win team that made the playoffs last year. Philadelphia is the defending Super Bowl champion. The Giants have one of the best defensive lines in the NFL, and Baltimore is one of the five best teams in the league. Like, this is not an easy start to the season, but I think you should feel very optimistic about the Chiefs. They're not really breaking in a whole lot of new pieces. Rob and I looked this up because I was curious. I said, Rob, can you pull up the week one depth chart from last year and pull up the week one depth chart from this year, and let's just compare and contrast who's back, who's not, who's now starting, who's, let's compare these two things. From last year's 22 players, these are the changes. Obviously, Joe Tooney, he was a starter last year. He now plays for the Chicago Bears. Carson Steele was a week one starter for them. Granted, at fullback, but he was a starter for them early on in the season. Kareem Hunt wasn't on the team, and people liked Carson Steele at this time last year. Shamari Connor was starting for this team last year, and Tershawn Wharton was starting. Now, you had Rashee Rice. He's still on the team. He's not going to be available or active for this one. But for the most part, man, this is the same team as last year. I mean, I can do the math. That's 18 of their 22 starters. And if you want to put the asterisks by Rashee Rice, who is still on the team but injured, you're in a really good spot. And for most of these players, you feel like you've swapped them out for somebody who's, for the most part, comparable. Now, you don't have a Joe Tooney replacement, but you also feel better at left tackle today than you felt a year ago at this time. No one is worried about Carson Steele not starting for the Chiefs this year, even though he was a starter last year. Shamari Connor, they certainly are deep at that position. You're fine. And then Tershawn Wharton. You had Tershawn Wharton. You also didn't have Charles Omenihu as a starter last year. You also have spent a couple of draft picks to get a little deeper at that position or on the defensive line, whether it's with Gelati or Norman Lott. So I'm not going to make it seem like Wharton's not a miss in that, not a player that contributed last year. You certainly did. But you feel good about their defensive line heading into this matchup. Shamari Connor, you're fine at safety. Carson Steele, you're not worried about that, at least at that position. You like Breshad Smith. You have Kareem Hunt now. We'll see which contribution you can get from Elijah Mitchell. And the Joe Tooney thing was just always going to be a question mark because we're talking about a guy that's a Chiefs Hall of Famer, a potential NFL Hall of Famer, that now you have to replace. But for the most part, this is the same team as last year. So really important to get off to a good start, not be playing from behind, not be behind the eight ball. When you look at the schedule that they start off with, man, for a lot of teams in the league, this is a 1-3, 2-2 start. You feel really good about the Chiefs getting off to a good start and playing well in September, obviously because of coaching, quarterback, and that level of continuity. But you also got to feel good because this is a team that has played together for the last year, year and a half, longer for some of their key players. This is also a team that has won and played in a lot of close games. So I think you got to feel really good about them in these first six games without Rashee Rice. And I would say a pretty difficult start to their season, Rob.
I feel like all the time in the NFL, and I'm a part of this too, we hear about how, you know, it's very difficult to create a dynasty because you lose so many pieces. We've watched the Cowboys documentary. We know about the Patriots. Eventually, free agency, all these things happen and you just lose pieces. That's why these things eventually fall apart. If we were to pull the Patriots roster on their first Super Bowl versus their final Super Bowl, it's, oh my goodness, can you believe how different it is? Those are the things that happen. It is a little bit unprecedented what the Chiefs are doing with their continuity. This is not, hey, one or two guys who are in the pipeline came up. This is 18 of 22. This is the majority. And you could argue one of the guys that they got rid of was their own choice. They traded Joe Tooney. That wasn't, hey, he walked in for agency and he got a mega deal somewhere. He did get a mega deal, but the Chiefs made that decision. It's unprecedented what Brett Veach and co. have been able to do because the conventional wisdom is eventually these things fall apart because you can't keep it together forever. And yet, I bet if we looked up the 2023 first week roster, it would still be 12, 13, 14 plus of the same. They don't have a core. They don't have a group. They have a starting unit. This is like I know it's cross-board comparing, but for a while there, the Warriors are the same starting five year in and year out. That's basically what the Chiefs are doing in a sport where it's not supposed to happen that way.
That's a really good point. And I mean, a lot of it is just, to me, the foundational pieces. Like if you were talking about the pillars that the Chiefs have, man, all their pillars are healthy, active, and available for this game. Creed Humphrey has been a pillar. Trey Smith has been a pillar. Obviously a quarterback. Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones, Trent McDuffie, Nick Bolton is healthy and available for this game. Like if I asked you right now to make a list of who you think are the 10 best players for the Kansas City Chiefs, man, eight of those guys have played in and won Super Bowls, multiple Super Bowls. They've been here for a while. This is a team where you retain 80, 85% of your starters, and anybody that wasn't around, they can quickly fall in line. So when you go to a guy like Christian Fulton, who obviously we expect to play and be a major contributor for this team, hey, man, this is how we do things here. I know you're a little bit new, but we have a standard here. We're going to hold you to that standard, and we want you to come help us continue to win championships and continue to play at a high level. This isn't a team that has a whole lot of turnover for this season. So I think that's something that you got to feel really, really optimistic about heading into this. I don't want to sell this like it's not a difficult stretch. I also don't want to take for granted how the Chiefs have been able to navigate this thing. I mean, we're talking about you playing 3 10- or 11-win teams in the first month of the season. And the overwhelming sentiment is that Kansas City is going to get off to a good start because they always get off to a good start. You got this game coming up against the Chargers. A game that obviously, first game of the season, so you got a lot of time to prepare for them. Fast forward to the Philadelphia Eagles, so you get extra time to prepare for that, extra time to rest up. It's your home opener, a team that you obviously know very well in Philadelphia, a team that we'll see how you match up with coming up this upcoming season. And then you got a Baltimore team at the end of the month at home, a team that you obviously have seen a bunch, but is a very talented, very good team, more than capable of beating you in the regular season. I really think that continuity for them is going to be a plus heading into this year.
It will be, I think it will be a plus early in the season. I agree with you 100%. I think it'll be the $1 million, $1 billion, pick a number dollar question throughout the season, because this, what we're describing is the glass half full approach to continuity is king. And I actually agree with you, but there's a yin and a yang to this. By being basically the same roster, you could argue that they are not better. And in the NFL, if you're not better, people are passing you. That is the other side of that coin. I don't know the Bills got better. I think the Ravens did get better. I think the Broncos got better. But the glass half full, the one side of the coin is continuity is king early in the season. They got the same 18. Let's go get it. My group versus your group in a sport we're not supposed to have it. That's how me and you feel. But I kind of understand the other side of the coin too. The Colin Cowherd side, the, you know, I guess Craig Carr, whatever side is anti-Chiefs will tell you, if you're the same, you're not better. And when you're not getting better in the league, eventually people pass you, and some of their competitors in the AFC did get better. The question will be, did their better get good enough to pass the Chiefs? That is the overarching question in this season. I'm not worried about the 10th straight AFC West or anything like that. The biggest question is, did the Chiefs staying the same maintain their dominance, or did someone catch them because all they did this offseason was maintain?
Can we take a quick look back to last year in the NFL draft? And I'm kind of curious how you guys feel about this now that we are a year removed. So just last season, Marvin Harrison Jr. was the 4th overall pick in the draft. You remember, there was a time that people were talking about trading L'Jarius Sneed and the Chiefs number one and thinking that could go get you Marvin Harrison Jr. I would say that he had a disappointing rookie year, certainly based off the expectations that people had on him. Malik Nabers, who was phenomenal last season. He had 89 catches for 1,600 yards. He was phenomenal last season. He was really, really good. Romo Dunze was a first-round pick. Brian Thomas Jr. was also a first-round pick. You also had Xavier Worthy and Ricky Pearsall, also Xavier Leggett. So there were a lot of wide receivers that were drafted in round one last year. How would you do a redraft of those wide receivers now after we've seen their first year of action? And I think you can even throw Ladd McConkey now in the mix. I know he wasn't drafted in round one, but we're talking about a guy who was the 34th overall pick. I think that Ladd McConkey goes in the first round. If you are now doing a redraft, How do you think you redraft this? Where do you think Xavier Worthy goes now that we've seen all these wide receivers play for one season?
I still think Harrison goes early. I know his numbers were not up to par or what people were talking about last year for Marvin Harrison.
I would be very curious.
He would
right
go
now.
After Neighbors, but I still think he goes ahead of Xavier Worthy.
Neighbors is definitely going ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. If you could redo this. Are we sure that Marvin Harrison goes ahead of Brian Thomas Jr.?
No.
I'm saying if they do it right now, like if you could go back in time and if you tell Arizona you can take Brian Thomas Jr. and Marvin Harrison, are we sure that the Cardinals take Marvin Harrison over Brian Thomas Jr.? Because I'm not sure if that's the case.
I think they would take Brian Thomas, but I think Harrison still slides in at 3. That's right. Because I know Harrison's numbers underwhelmed, but I still think the hype around Harrison was a little high, but it wasn't like he was unproductive in year one. Marvin Harrison had a good season, but I do think it goes the LSU guys. Neighbors and Thomas go 1-2. For me, the real question is McConkey versus Worthy. Because Worthy had a good rookie season. It was good. No one is going to argue the opposite side of that. I feel like McConkey had a better year, but I feel like Worthy has a higher ceiling still if we're doing a redraft, which is how drafts work. There's so much about potential and what you can be versus what you are. But I think it would probably go Neighbors, Thomas, Harrison, and now McConkey and Worthy becomes the real conversation point.
It's kind of interesting because I would say you obviously couldn't have done wrong with either player. Like if the Chiefs had Ladd McConkey, you'd be thrilled about who he is as a player. I also think the Chargers would be very thrilled if they had drafted Xavier Worthy with the 34th overall pick. I don't really know if you could go wrong. I probably think Ladd's a little bit better of a wide receiver, a little bit more dependable. I really like his skill set. But Xavier Worthy is a fine player. You're happy to take him with where you selected him. I will say this, I think very unique about both of these teams that are going up against each other. I don't think the other side has that other prospect. Like the Chargers do not have a wide receiver like Xavier Worthy. A guy that you think is a burner, a guy that you think can stretch the field, a guy that you think, like, they do not have that player on their team. I also don't think the Chiefs have a Ladd McConkey type. Like, they don't have that, to me, wizard in the slot that you think this season could have 1,100 yards and have number one numbers. Maybe you don't look at Ladd McConkey as being a true number one, but I could definitely see him taking the next step where this year we're looking at him as being an 80 catch, 1,100 yards, 9 touchdown kind of player. I think he showed you that ability last season. But sometimes, like, both teams in the draft can get exactly what they want. You know, we do this a lot. Man, you know, they could have had this player, or what if they had drafted this player? I don't think you have to do that with Xavier Worthy. It was obvious that the Chiefs felt like they needed a wide receiver. Ladd McConkey was definitely one of those players that we talked about, guys that we discussed. He was on the board when the Chiefs selected Xavier Worthy. They took Worthy. I think they ended up making the right pick. I also think that the Chargers ended up making the right pick, and they had one of the better young receivers last year in the National Football League. Sandwiched in between that is Keon Coleman for Buffalo. He did not have the season that I expected him to have last year. I thought he could be like a Plaxico Burress type. Certainly has the build and the athleticism for it. We'll see if he takes the next step in the second year of his career. Coming up on the other side, we got a little bit of a people's court question to ask you guys about some of your tendencies while watching the game. I'll explain. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. CDOT considers himself a man of the people. And now, he's asking for your help. Please help The Drive in the latest installment of The People's Court.
Now, I didn't know that this was a thing. Rob has informed me that this is, in fact, a thing. So I was scrolling on TikTok, and I saw a news story. And I try to bring those news stories to you guys so we can discuss them. I mean, we've discussed some doozies on this show. You guys remember the man who was in a relationship with ChatGPT? Remember the story about the roller coaster in Idaho? Those stories. Found on TikTok. That should be a new bit that we do. Well, this is the latest one that I've found. People are putting ice in their beer.
All right, so there's this new thing blowing up on TikTok, and it's probably going to offend some of you. The trend is putting ice in your beer. I know this Sounds a little strange, but the comments, they're kind of all over the place, with some people calling it a total game changer for a hot day or helping you to stay hydrated, while others calling it an absolute travesty since they're basically watering down the flavor. You guys, what do you think light beer tastes like? But what do you think? Is it genius or is this a crime against beer?
Now I come to you guys asking a question, 913-586-7965. I don't really understand this trend. This isn't something that I would participate in. Why are you putting ice in the beer? Why am I drinking a beer that isn't already cold enough? Doesn't make sense to me. Like if I'm out somewhere, it's already cold. It's in the bottle. It's in the can. It's on tap. It's on draft. Why do I need to put ice in it? You were telling me that on a hot summer day, some of you out there listening to the show right now would be out on the patio, just hanging out, right? And you would tell your lovely wife, hey, can you bring me a beer? And she went into the cup cabinet, got you a cup, went into the refrigerator, you know, did the little ice thing, and then she poured you a beer? You participate in this activity? I got to know. Text line 913-586-7965. Is this something that you participate in? Are you a ice in your beer individual? Because this is not something that I would partake in myself. Rob, where do you weigh in on this? Is this fair or foul?
This is beyond foul. This is a travesty, if we're being honest. This is words I can't say on the radio level of anger. That news report said that people are doing it because it helps you hydrate. Drink a water! Have a beer, drink a water, go back to beer. There is absolutely no reason to be putting a crisp, refreshing beer. I don't even care the style. I like IPAs, you don't. I don't care what kind of beer you are drinking. It is absolutely a crime against humanity to pour that over a glass of ice. And I'm not anti-ice. You have a Sprite, perfect. You have a cocktail. I have no problem with that. You're telling me, you go to the bar and you're like, man, you know what I really want? Boulevard Wheat. Put it on the rocks. You're a sicko.
Yeah, and some of the drinks, like, you're putting that with your Busch Light, your Coors Light, you're putting ice in it. It's already a little bit watered down. You're going to water it down a little bit more? I don't understand this. Text line 913-586-7965. I want to know where you guys stand on this. Are you thumbs up or thumbs down ice in beer? Fox News in Houston is telling me this is a trend, that people are now coming around to it. Now, somebody said we did this when we were in the military because we kind of had to. Hey, we wanted something cold. We're out. That makes sense to me. Desperate times call for desperate measures, and we appreciate your service. Hey, I was overseas. We had to do this to keep it cold. Okay, I'm not mad at that. But you're back here in America now. You're telling me when you go to the other place, you're telling them you want a Boulevard Wheat on the rocks? That's a little odd to me. It's a little bit off. Again, that's not a trend that I would participate in. Not at all.
I mean this seriously. If I was with friends and they're like, hey, I'll do a nice Busch Light. Put it on ice, please. I'm not staying at this establishment with you anymore. I'm going home. I'm not partaking in this activity. I don't want to be associated with you. I don't want to be guilty by association of this weirdo behavior. You know who would have really strong opinions on this? I bet somewhere listening, Bink, has punched a hole in a wall at the idea of someone pouring beer over ice.
I do want to get your opinion on this because I've seen some people say this before. You know, this Missouri KU game, it doesn't have the buzz. It doesn't have... It's never going to be how it was when we were kids. Yes, it was the rivalry, and the rivalry mattered, but it also had something for its standing purposes. You think back to that last year where Missouri was in the Big 12. It wasn't just the fact that the rivalry was ending. It also was the added in of, you need to win these games to win the Big 12. So it is impossible for the rivalry to be how it was. Rob, one thing that I've learned over the process of doing a documentary about this rivalry and hearing people's stories and watching old footage and doing all of this stuff is, and I kind of think this is like a, I don't know if it's a get off my lawn take, we got to allow this new generation to have their own memories with this rivalry the way that you and I have. They have to have their Christian Moody game. You remember that game? Man, going to school that next day after Christian Moody missed those free throws, Rob, you probably hate Thomas Gardner, for example, because he dropped 40 on your team. We got to allow these kids in this new generation, we got to allow them to have their own heroes of this rivalry and their own stories. Like last year when Missouri beats them in basketball and the fans get to run on the court. Like, you got to allow this new group of 10, 11-year-olds, college students, they got to have their own rivalry. And if there's one thing I have learned in this, and I remember this back whenever Missouri and Kansas decided to play in that hurricane relief effort. I don't remember what hurricane it was, but you know the game that I'm talking about. You remember leading into it, no one really knew what to expect, right? Like, everybody was kind of like, man, is it going to be the same? If you've got an opportunity to go to the basketball versions of this over the last couple of years, I'm here telling you it ain't much different. Because once you walk in there and you see your team playing against that team, you really want your team to beat them. I've been to a lot of Missouri sporting events. I've been to a lot of KU sporting events. It's different when they play each other. Missouri has this tradition. They play Mr. Brightside at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And as the chorus is about to go, they say, blank KU. That's like the big reveal at the end of it. To see the students do that while they're playing Kansas and beating Kansas, really cool. To see all the students run on the floor and then they play the song again, and then they put Beat KU on the Jumbotron as the students are run on the floor is really, really cool. This is where I think some of us old guys, and yes, I'll put myself in this old guy category. These kids got to have their own memories with this rivalry. It's not going to be how it was in 1994. Roy Williams is not coming back. Norm Stewart is not coming back. That's our moment. And hopefully we do a good enough job with this thing that we pass it down where, Rob, one day you will have a son and you know one of the things you will teach him is we don't cheer for them. I went to KU. Your mom went to KU. Guess where you're going? That's what makes this rivalry so cool where we live. So I don't want to hear either side trying to downplay this thing over the next couple of days. I go to a lot of Missouri sporting events. Right now, the get-in is over $200. It ain't like that, even for them in the SEC. They play Alabama coming up in a couple of weeks. It ain't going to be $200 to get in and watch them play Alabama. They play South Carolina in 2 weeks. It will not be two. This is to sit up in the nosebleeds. It's over $200 to watch Missouri play Kansas in a football game. You can't tell me this rivalry doesn't matter to people. I don't want to hear about it. It's not like how it used to be. Nothing is how it used to be in 1997. That's not the way things work in 2025. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Lance Leipold. He is the head coach at the University of Kansas. They play Missouri this week. Keep it right here. So drive.